This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. This week, we spoke with Paul Morrow, a retired NYPD investigator, about the investigation into the murders of four University of Idaho students. The investigation continues into the murders of Ethan Chapin, Zanna Kernodle, Kaylee Gonsalves, and Madison Mogan, all 20 or 21 years of age, all in the Greek system, and all with big future plans. Ethan and Zanna were dating. Kaylee and Madison were best friends. Police in Moscow, Idaho, say all four were stabbed to death, likely as they slept. They believe it was a targeted attack and have ruled out a number of people as suspects, including the other roommates, the man Kaylee and Madison called shortly before they were killed, and the person who drove some of them home, as well as a man seen on surveillance at a food truck near two of the girls. Morrow offers insight about the pace of the investigation, whether all those people have really been ruled out, what law enforcement is looking at and has collected, and more. We often have to cut interviews down for time during the week, but thought you might like to hear this full interview. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to the Weekday Rundown podcast if you haven't already. Now, here's Paul Morrow on the Fox News Rundown Extra. So, students went back to class this week, as you know, at Idaho after Thanksgiving break. When they heard, as we all did, from police that this was a targeted attack, should that lessen the fears and worries of other students?
I would assess that that's the reason that the police are sticking very strongly to that term. And I also think that for them to use that term, they must have a data point that suggests to them that this was targeted. So I don't think they're saying it just for the reason that you indicate. So I think that you're correct that, you know, that the idea here is that the students should feel less threatened. The public in general should feel less threatened. I think that's what's behind sticking to that data point. But of course, you know, you really can't say that, right? You can't say, no, you don't have to worry about it. You know, this was a targeted attack. They haven't made an arrest yet. They very clearly don't have enough that they can say we have a real person of interest, because if they could, I think they would at this point for the reasons that you've suggested. So I guess my answer would be, I understand why they are saying that. I think they must have some foundation for saying it. But of course, no, the students should not feel, like they are completely safe, because this guy obviously is capable of a quadruple murder and he's still out there.
So many people have been ruled out, according to police, as suspects.
Yeah.
The other two roommates, the person who got them home, the male individual that two of the girls had been calling just before they were killed. What do we know about that? What does your mind tell you about that, like in terms of what we know about this investigation so far? Because there's obviously stuff, so much we don't know. But for police to come out and say, look, all of these people that were in these girls and this young man's life in the hours before this that we've seen on video, that we know that were in the house, we're ruling all of them out.
Yeah, so I think that goes back a little bit to your last question. To be honest, I am not entirely buying that for the same reasons that we just discussed, and for the reasons that, you know, I was discussing on the air over the weekend with Lawrence Jones. Mm-hmm. You know, the police don't want to reveal too much about what they're looking at, because they don't want non-police journalists, etc., PIs, there's apparently private investigators that have been hired that are poking around on this. You don't want those folks getting out front of your investigation, getting in the way, maybe driving somebody off, somebody away from the whole situation, not even necessarily the perp, maybe frightening off a potential witness, et cetera. So there's a lot of reasons for the police not to be revealing what they know. So when they say, look, we're washing out the following people, the guy at the grub truck, the Uber driver, Jack DeCuere, the boyfriend, et cetera, you know, that is potentially true, but it's also potentially a way for the police to say, hey, stay away from these folks, or we hope you stay away from these folks, because we might be still looking at one or more of them.
Interesting. So it's almost a way, it's almost a tactic then, possibly.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and one of the other reasons, you know, that they don't want to release too much information. They don't want to scare anybody off. They don't want to even give a vague description because, as they've said, you know, if we say, well, we're looking at a male, possibly a student, et cetera, if they go even that far, people are going to start pointing fingers at each other. People are going to be unnecessarily raised up to people who fit that description. You may get flooded with a whole host of bogus tips that just take you off track. So they want to keep it tight. They also want to hold back salient details that when the time comes, if they get somebody that they're looking at and they manage to interview that person and they manage to elicit some of those facts that they haven't publicly released, that serves as confirmatory. You can say, well, we didn't put that out, and he knows that. He's just said this to us, so we really do have to focus on this guy. Same goes for tips. Last I heard, there are at about 600 tips that have come in, and that doesn't even count tips that have come in through the FBI helpline. And if you get tips that have embedded in them relevant information, accurate information, that the police have not released, well, then you know what? We got to drop everything and focus on that tip because that's something that might give us some purchase.
Yeah, tell me more about the tips because we heard police ask for that. They said, and I'm paraphrasing here, one of the lead law enforcement folks on the ground in Moscow had said, even if you, and we've heard this before, right? Even if you don't think it's that big, even if you question the significance of this detail that you have, if it's sticking in your brain, share it with our brains.
Yeah, so, you know, you never know what's going to be, relevant. As the old saying goes, a lot of homicides are solved just because the detective that showed up put his hand on the hood of the car and said, wow, this car is warm. All right? It can be the very, very minor thing that actually leads you to, you know, who was there and who did whatever they did. I think one of the things that they're really stuck on, and I can actually confirm this part, they don't know the timeline completely for the victims. So Ethan and Zanna, they have on their timeline, and this is using primary sources. I'm not going to use anything that hasn't either come from the police or come from an interview with a family member who can confirm. 8 to 9 o'clock, they're at the fraternity house, Sigma Chi. Now, that's about 2 minutes walk from the location of the murders. Okay, I walked it Saturday evening, and there's no Ring cameras. It's a congested area with a lot of student housing piled on top of each other. It's a very sort of nested area that's up against the hill. They're there 8 to 9 at the fraternity house, and then they're 1:45 is the next time they're on the timeline, and that is when they hit the house at the location of the homicides. As far as Kaylee and Madison go, 10 o'clock p.m., they are at Corner Club, and they don't show up again until about 1:30 when they are at the grub truck. And then they hit the house at about 1:45. But their whereabouts during the day Saturday, prior to getting to Corner Club, that's also an investigatory gap that they still have. So if your theory of the case is that this is somebody who was in their orbit, but there was some level of stalking going on, he was doing some observation, and I say he, recognizing that we don't know it's a he, although I would assess that it is, you know, you want to know where these people were because there may have been something that sparked this event during the course of the day for one of these four victims. And unfortunately, at this point, even with the digital forensics that they're managing to pull, they haven't nailed all of that down yet. I think they will. That stuff's gettable, but it's real scut work. You got to dump cell towers. You got to try to get into phones. They're into Kaylee's phone, which was a very important thing that we learned over the weekend when Lawrence Jones interviewed Steve Gonsalves, Kaylee's father. So that should help track her movements on Saturday. But there's still a lot of open gaps in the timeline, and those could be very, very significant. And so when they're saying to the public, anything you know, please tell us. It could be something as minor as, you know, I think I saw Kaylee in town at 7:30 at the coffee shop. Well, then that gives you, and now they go pull that video, and boom, there she is.
Right.
So, you know, I think that they're looking for anything that can give them something of a timeline as to where these kids were leading up to the murders.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Law enforcement also said initially this appeared to be, I think, quote-unquote, a crime of passion. And we've since heard from one expert, a neuropsychologist, who was on Lawrence Jones' show over the weekend, saying that this might have been somebody who knew these students, may have been jealous of them or their lives. I know that's getting into some more of the profiling and sort of the behavioral analysis and figuring out who, you know, matches that description. But knowing that the FBI is involved and that there are profilers involved in this case, what is going on behind the scenes then, other than, you know, the phones, the technical aspect of it? What's going on sort of in the psychological aspect, in your opinion?
So, you know, in a way, it's, we've hit a war of attrition, right? It's almost like a battle of wills. Very often in a homicide case, if you do get a fast arrest, it's because, you know, a quick interview was done and everybody says, you know, the neighbors say, oh, that couple was fighting all the time, or, you know what, they had broken up, but the ex was seen at the house an hour before the murder. You didn't have that here because all of the students decamped after the homicides for their Thanksgiving break. So you lost the ability to go out and do sort of first-tier interviews. And so that was an undeniable delay. So in terms of psychology, I would just say that if you were going to get a fast solve, it likely would have come about like that, all right, before all the forensics were done. Now that that's taken off the table, psychologically, what do you have? You have this task force of law enforcement, and you have real resources there, right? You got Idaho State Police, I can confirm for you, is doing the DNA analysis. That didn't go federal, okay? Likely, in my opinion, because they could get it done faster. You know, the FBI lab has a lot of priority cases, et cetera, et cetera. Idaho State Police said, we can do this. I'm sure it's a certified lab, et cetera. I, you know, have nothing but faith there. I think that they can do the job. They said they can do it. They'll do it. So, but it comes down to that now. There, you have this task force who's going to be poking and scraping at this minutia of forensic information, some of it physical and some of it digital. And on the other side, you have this stone psychopath, all right? You know, we talk about these things and they tend to be a little bit antiseptic after a while. You have four murders, you know, but having been there, walked the area, been to the house, seen the college kids around, comes home to you a little bit how awful and brutal and abnormal such a thing is, and how out there whoever did this must be. It's really an act of evil. So that guy is out there someplace. He thinks he can outlast that task force. He's not breaking. He thinks he's more clever than they are. He's tougher than they are. He's going to outlast them because now it's settled down into not a fast solve. So since you bring up psychology, what insight I have into psychology, which, you know, is as a cop, you do get some. You have here how much can they bring to bear so that you ultimately either get a confession or he talks to somebody or, you know, they finally get enough to arrest him. And, you know, he gives a confession maybe during interrogation. But he's trying to outlast them. And frankly, my money is still on the good guys. I think they're going to put together enough data points that they're going to develop a possible. And I would think that the DNA might serve as confirmatory once they have a possible suspect.
Yeah, DNA. I mean, you're getting to the point, to the part where I was going to ask about Zanna Kernodle's father saying that her daughter had defensive wounds, that his daughter had defensive wounds.
Right.
I imagine any physical evidence like that does get put into, I don't know the name of the database, but CODIS. CODIS.
Yes, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And if the person's, you know, it's that's not a foregone conclusion that there's a match, right? That there would have to be existing evidence in that database for there to be a match, but at least you get it in there and you have that evidence. Do you suspect that there is that kind of physical evidence at this stage?
Yeah, so apparently it was a very messy crime scene, right, according to the early reports, and how could it not be? I think there's a good chance that the perp cut himself during this, especially as you said, we know, according to the police, they used the term some of the victims had defensive wounds. So it's Zanna, according to her father, and one more of them. Okay, so we don't know who that other person is, but another person had it. So even if the crime scene was not exactly sacrosanct the way you might like it to be, you know, and I don't know that, but there's been a lot of attention towards was the crime scene contaminated, et cetera. But you can do eliminations, right? You can say, okay, we have 9 bits of DNA here. We have 9 DNA profiles that we were able to pull out. Well, we can identify 8 of them. 4 are the victims. These 2 are the cops. This one is the roommate downstairs, et cetera, et cetera. If you can develop the point that you have an outlier bit of DNA, an alien bit of DNA that you can't identify, and it's at the scene, or it's blood, okay? It's somebody's blood that's at the scene that shouldn't be there. Sure, you pump it through CODIS, you're probably not going to get a hit, all right? That's not a very populated database, let's say, as compared to the fingerprint database, okay, that's out there in AFIX. But what you might get, first of all, is you might get a family connection hit. If any of the family members are in there, it'll come back as, let's say, a 55% match or a 60% match, and then you can start reverse engineering from there to see, okay, does this go to, all right, this guy seems to be a semi-match. Well, does he have a relative that goes to the University of Idaho or lives in Moscow? Or
that's kind of like the Golden State Killer, right? Like, that's how they found the Golden State Killer, was a distant relative match. But it was in a different database. It wasn't in CODIS. It was in, like, an open source genealogy website.
Yeah, they went to the genealogy website. And that's even more rare, by the way. And those companies do fight that. But, yeah, they do. That is another possibility that you can do. And if you can get a family hit that's even, you know, remotely close, you know, it's a very good pointer. But the other thing about the DNA, I just want to make the point, and I think this is the real value of getting a DNA profile out of the physical evidence, is that, again, it's confirmatory. And right. If you asked me how this thing is ultimately going to be solved, I think that what they're going to ultimately do, it's going to be one of two things. It's going to be a very good forensic digital piece, you know, something they dump the cell phone tower, they go through hundreds, maybe thousands of records, which, by the way, the FBI is very good at, and the FBI is in this case. So that's where I think their real value is going to be. Not to disparage the behavioral folks, but that's very speculative, the behavioral kind of stuff. The value of the Bureau being in this thing, to me, is their ability to crunch data. They can write code, and you can take enormous piles of data. The only agency that I know, other than FBI, that can do that at that level was MILD Unit, NYPD Intelligence. And because we had a lot of analysts, and, you know, you can take reams of data, throw it at these folks, make them, you know, just task them with making it make sense, and they can do it. So I think that what will happen is they'll either get a bit of digital that gives them a possible, or they're going to get, now with the kids back at school, et cetera, they're going to get a tip. And maybe they were already sitting on it, all right, because they may not have vetted all these 600 tips that have come in. And they're going to get a possible. And what that does for you is it gives you the opportunity to go at that possible. Let's say you get 4 possibles. Well, you go at all 4 possibles and you say, we'd like to get a consensual swab of your DNA. Okay? And, you know, you take the Q-tip and you swab the inside of their cheek. You take the saliva. Well, if of those 4, 3 of them say sure, and 1 of them says, I don't believe in that, you know, then maybe you want to look at the 4th guy.
Finally, before I let you go, you mentioned something that caught me. Not a lot of Ring cameras in this college area.
Mm-hmm.
It might feel strange to a lot of us to hear about unsolved crimes these days. You know, of course, we've been talking about DNA evidence now, and there are cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
How strange is it to be in this position? Because I was doing just a little bit of light reading before this, and there are plenty of still unsolved crimes out there, even in this day and age.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, one of the things people don't realize is that you know, and it's been some criticism, and I think, I don't know that it's unwarranted, but I think it's unfounded, let's put it that way. There's been some criticism of Moscow PD, why haven't they solved this, et cetera. And not every case that results in a solve is perfectly run and was done perfectly. And, you know, the converse of that is not every case that's perfectly done gets solved. The homicide solve rate for America is actually just around 60%, 60. So, and that's down from what it had been, you would think it would be going up with all this forensic technology and with the videos. But the truth of the matter is that, unfortunately, people do still get away with murder. Random murder, you know, where there's no connection to the victim is very rare. That's the most difficult thing to solve. I think as the video does become more ubiquitous across our society, you'll start to see that rate go up. I do think that, but that's not going to happen in Idaho, at least from what I saw. And I think if there was good video, the police wouldn't be entreating the subject, the public, on this subject so fervently. You know, they're constantly saying, if you have any video or if you have anything, come to us. And I don't think that they have the video that they need. And having walked around the area, I don't think they're going to get it. It's a college area. The kids don't have these cameras, which is unfortunate because they're relatively inexpensive. And I think if any good comes out of this, maybe it's a little bit of a wake-up call. If you got a kid at college or if you are a kid at college, buy one of these cameras, post it ostentatiously outside your door. Look out for each other a little bit because, you know, I wrote a piece for FoxNews.com. It's up on my page that campus-related crime is through the roof in America. And I think this case is unfortunately confirmatory.
Paul Morrow, retired NYPD inspector, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I didn't mean to keep you for so long, but thanks for all that insight. I really appreciate it.
No, it was fun. Thank you.
All right, sir. Be well.
You too.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network, Fox News Rewind Financial Crisis 08. A look back at the biggest financial crisis since the Great Depression.
The market is not functioning properly.
Subscribe now at foxnewspodcasts.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.